Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Shank Bagley. Hello and welcome to Shatbaggily, an old Lincolnshire adjective to describe absolutely anything loose and disorderly, which sums up this Lincolnshire lass quite nicely, as I do tend to go off on a tangent every so often. In a moment, we'll meet a chef whose blue glove appeared in a film with Kate Beckinsale, discover the point when aubergines go, and find out what the head of edibles at RHS Wisley had for tea, and who is the most famous student at Raymond Blanc's cookery school. First though, with it being episode 22, here are a few other things with the same number. Days in the gestation period of a rat. Metres, the furthest distance a watermelon seed was spat to make it into the Guinness World Records, as you do. And the longest broadcast career of a television pet. And that's George the Tortoise from BBC's Blue Peter. George first appeared in May 1982 and his final appearance 14th of April 2004. Sadly, he's no longer with us and he was thought to have been more than 80 years old when he died. He received more fan mail than some of the presenters on the show, bet that went down well, and helped millions of children learn how to care for their tortoises. I love tortoises. I guess people still have them as pets and suspect handed down through generations with them living so long. Do let me know. I used to have one as a child. I remember he had orange paint on his back. Not quite sure why. Obviously some incident. But if you do have a tortoise, love to hear about it and let me know. So I hope I find you well. Since we last caught up, we've had a swimming pool in the hearth at home. So yes, we have a leak in the roof. And I now appear to be married to a pensioner, as Glyn turned 65 the other day. He doesn't look bad on it, and I take full responsibility for that. Time to meet our first guest, and it was whilst Glyn and I were working at the RHS, the Royal Horticultural Society, garden at Wisley in Surrey, that we caught up again with Manju Marley. You may recall Manju joined us on Shatbagley a few months ago when she was invited as a guest to the coronation. Well, this time Manju was part of a live stream from Wisley doing a demo to the world, but not before we chatted for a few minutes whilst we were setting up and I was carefully placing her latest book on display. But when did it come out?
The book came out during the pandemic, actually, and obviously I couldn't market it, but... It's a really handy book. Loads of people love it because it's a picture per recipe. So it's easy.
We like a picture.
Yes.
And the only thing is, if it's all very well having pictures, though, they possibly wouldn't look like your result. But well, it's always good to have a guide.
Yes, it is. Just a guide, you know, a rough image of what it should look like. But of course, food photography is totally different from reality. Yeah. Because if you did cook your okra or your vegetables to death, completely, it would just be a wilted mess. So we sort of partially cook food and to give it that nice sort of bulk.
Yeah, no one needs to see something a bit
like sorry slop. Looking. Yes, yeah.
So in here, you're going to do a recipe, aren't you? Because we're chatting before you're going to do your demo.
Absolutely.
So what are you going to do?
I'm making Bengan Bharta, which is a smoked aubergine mash. It's almost like baba ganoush, you know, the sort of Turkish, Middle Eastern type of pate, aubergine pate. So it's that which you can have with chapatis or pita breads. And it's spiced with garlic, chilies, cumin, coriander.
Ooh. Nice.
Very simple.
And that's, I'm guessing it's in the book.
It's in the book, yeah. And along with it, a lovely carrot, an onion and tomato salad. And we've got a cucumber raita or a kira raita, which is a cucumber relish with yogurt.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I can never pronounce it right. But it's like a writer, but without the rolling R's.
Yes.
I always think it's the cooling down bit.
That's it.
Is that
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If you've got a lot of chili, a dairy product or coconut milk would soften the heat of the chili.
So which part of the world does this recipe originate from?
This one is a northern dish, the aubergine mash. The carrot salad is from Mumbai or Western India, and the raita is overall, everybody has it sort of universally in India. And here.
Yes. I remember working with a gentleman. Now, he was from, it would be something like Turkey, Morocco. And they did something very similar. But it was thinner and you drank it.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was beautiful.
I bet it was. It must have been sort of a yogurt smoothie, like a lassi.
But it was a minty and it all.
Lovely. Yes, yes. Yeah, well, they call them salty lassis.
Do they?
Yeah, in India, which is like a yogurt drink.
Yes.
So it's almost similar, savoury yogurt drink.
Salted lassis.
Salted lassi, yeah.
That's the name of a band.
Is it really?
No, it should be.
It should be, yeah, salted lassi, maybe. But if I was talented musically, then yeah, maybe.
Could you talk us through a little bit of this recipe for us, Manjit?
Yeah, it's very easy. Like, it's the prep that takes longer than the cooking. Mm. The salads, I'm going to season them with a lovely hot dressing of chilies, mustard seeds to add to the nuttiness, and a bit of turmeric. Mm. And then the raita is just grating a cucumber, squeezing the juice out, and then mixing it with a bit of yogurt. I'm using Greek-style yogurt and some cumin powder and black pepper.
And that's it?
Yeah. And then the aubergine mash is sautéing it with onions or shallots, adding the spice mixture, cooking the aubergines, and then serving it.
Now, okay, cooking the aubergines, I know you mentioned it's almost a paste-like. When you are cooking aubergines, to start with, they're really, really firm, and then they go a little bit softer, and then all of a sudden they go...
Yes.
Where are we heading?
We're heading to that bit. Yeah, I couldn't do the noise.
Well, I can't roll my R's, so it's all right.
So we're even, Stevens. But that's you want it like a mash.
Right, and then what do we do?
And then you serve it with pita breads or chapatis, your salad, and your yogurt raita.
Fabulous. How's the book going? I know you're going to sell some today.
Yeah, hopefully. and just talk to people about spice and happy cooking.
Yeah. You were doing a cookery class this morning before you came.
Yes, I was. We made Spanish tortilla omelettes with eggs, potatoes, seasoned mushrooms, a bit of fresh green parsley, and baked some ciabatta bread to go with it.
Do you know, whenever you talk about food, your face lights up. You love it, don't you?
I love it. It's fun. It's fun. It makes people happy. And food brings everyone together, which is a real good thing.
We had some lovely comments after your chat with me on Chat Bagley, and saying about, because you were chatting primarily about the royal wedding,
yes,
weren't you? But the amount of people afterwards said...
The coronation.
It's a coronation. Oh, my Lord.
Everyone's been calling it the wedding. It was like a wedding, really.
Well, I suppose it was a wedding to the country, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
She
was
says, quickly getting out of it.
No. Like, you know, day wear. What's that mean? yes, it was it was good fun.
But we had folks saying... Could we now learn a little bit about cooking? And I was so happy when you arrived. I thought, yes, we shall do something. Because I don't want complaints. You see,
the last thing we need is
complaints.
Or they can write to me directly. You don't have to complain to you.
You can, though, can't you? Because things are so accessible.
Yes, The Real Manju, Instagram, Twitter, The Real Manju. Or my website, manjumali.com.
When you say it's The Real Manju, is somebody else impersonating?
Might be. There's loads. There's loads of imposters. I could... be the imposter, who knows?
We will never know.
No, you won't.
No, it was definitely the real one. Thank you to Manju, and her book Easy Indian Cookbook is available everywhere, and regards the recipe, Manju is kindly sending it over, and as soon as I get it, I'll pop it on Chat Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages so you can have a go. Have to say, we've been doing quite a lot of cooking at home recently, and thinking aubergine, made a spiced aubergine and halloumi pilaf with yogurt and sumac last night. Absolutely gorgeous it was. This evening, it's salt and pepper chicken with egg fried rice. I know. Staying with eating, let's meet the garden manager of edibles at Wisley, Sheila Das. RHS Wisley is the most beautiful place if you ever get the chance to visit. And when we arrived to set up our demo kitchen for their live streaming, I did spot a couple of lemon trees. So took a picture of them, as you don't tend to see them in the UK. Good job I did, as the following day, chatting to Sheila in the World Garden, they disappeared.
Yeah, we've just moved everything inside, Katie, because it's due to get a little bit cold this weekend. So, yeah, some of the tender stuff we're starting to make a fuss of now.
Right. When you say make a fuss of, obviously take it in, and what do you do? Because the thing is, nowadays, more people are having lemons and what was the other one I saw? Pineapples. You can grow pineapple now in this country.
Yeah, people are experimenting. And of course, pineapples have been experimented with since the Victorians tried to have a go in heated pits and all those sorts of things. But actually, really, I think what we're focusing on more now is what can we do with the climate that we've got. So rather than trying to create all those artificial conditions, and a bit of winter protection's okay, like we've done with the lemons, but generally speaking, here in the World Food Garden, we're trying to work out what will grow in our climate. And then we're saying, if things won't grow in our climate, or they can't cope with the changes, then we won't have them. So we're really being, you know, it's not always about what we want. It's about what we can do and what nature will let us do, really.
So how, because I was going to say, the question was how long this garden's been in existence. And my next question was going to be, have you already seen changes with what you thought you could grow and what you can't?
Absolutely, yeah. So 2021, we opened the World Food Garden. Really exciting, and the garden's bedded in really well, actually. So we've gone full on, we're no dig, so we're not disturbing soil. We're letting the soil biology build up and make a healthy environment for growing in, and no chemicals, nothing like that on our soil. So that's how we're gardening it. And yes, we have already seen changes, but we've seen some surprises, actually. So last winter was an odd one. We had a very, very wet spell and then a very, very cold spell. And what that meant was that things that we just thought would be staples of winter crops, like we'd overwinter chard normally, and, you know, purple sprouting broccoli, broad beans, some of them took quite a hit. But then there are other things that we've been introducing, so some winter greens like Chinese greens, a wide variety of different pak choys and other things, and winter spinach and other things that did the course. So really what we're trying to do is work out what will work. And the key thing, I would say, is have a bit of everything. So that if one thing gets a bit shocked and it doesn't quite work, you've got something else that might make a good fist of it.
Okay. It's a great platform you have here, because people come from all over, not just from the country, but all over the world, to see what they could possibly do in their garden. But of course, up down here in Surrey is so different from somebody up in Manchester. But therefore, you've got another RHS facility. So are you dotted all over then, Sheila?
Yeah, we've got five RHS gardens now, and it's really exciting actually to have one up in the northwest. So we used to at Wisley hold the national collections of rhubarb and gooseberries. Neither of those crops like it hot and dry. They want it wet and ideally a little bit colder sometimes as well. So we had a look, you know, we've got another garden up in Yorkshire at Harlow Carr, but where should they go to? And actually both the Rhubarb rhubarb and gooseberry collections.
There's a new one you've
developed. The gooseberries, yeah. Rhubarb and gooseberry collections have gone up to our garden at Bridgewater, which is in Salford, and hopefully enjoying a bit wetter weather than they could get here. Conversely, you know, we still want to develop collections at Wisley. It's a really important part of what we do. So we're looking at holding the National Collection of Figs, which might like it hotter, drier, harder, tougher.
I love figs. So can we grow figs then? Not UK-wide, or does it have to be down the south?
Yeah, there are different varieties, lots of different varieties of figs. Some of them will overwinter quite well. Some of them want a more sheltered spot over winter, and some of them we might grow in pots and move inside in the winter. So we'll be experimenting with that to really see what we can do. But that's really, really exciting. And, you know, in some of them, we're going to let them grow out in a more open space so they can get quite big, because a really mature fig tree that's been allowed to run rampant is quite impressive. And then also we'll look at growing them in some pots and in trained forms as well, in which case we'll restrict their roots a bit to calm them down.
We were doing a little earlier with Raymond Blanc, and there was a gentleman in the audience, and I don't think anybody quite caught on with his accent. He was Canadian, and he was asking you about a particular apple. Was it a Macintosh apple? Can you remember? Was it that
yes.
one, I think?
Yes, yeah. Yes, it was, yeah.
But I think he was just seeing it, because obviously Canada have their apples, and I think he was just seeing if we'd heard of it, and of course we hadn't, had we?
Yes, I'm sure if Jim Aubrey, our apple expert, was here, he'd be able to give chapter and verse on it. But no, not something that we'd come across. And I think the gentleman was looking at what would be the equivalent. That, I think, is a really good point to make. If we can't always have the exact thing that we want, what's the thing that delivers a similar outcome for us? And I'm a real fan of outcomes. Instead of thinking, how can I get what I want, and having one desired thing, we think, well, what's the general outcome? come. I want an apple that's maybe that fruits at a certain time or has a sweet taste or a tangy taste, or, you know, I want it specifically. It's a bit like Raymond was saying in his demonstration, you know, am I making a, you know, a tart, or am I making a I don't know, a crumble. So think of things that will work for different settings. So that gentleman was actually along those right tracks of, well, I'm here now, what can I grow that's an equivalent, rather than trying to get the thing from abroad and trying to grow something here that maybe doesn't want to grow.
Yeah. Being head of edibles, that must be an incredible role, because you've got to be kind of across everything, haven't you, Sheila?
Yeah, edibles is, I mean, I'm bound to say this, I'm biased. I believe that food is the key, really, to helping us resolve some of the challenges that we're facing at the moment. We have degraded a lot of our landscapes by growing food and damaged a lot of our soils. Soil is an amazing tour de force on our planet for all sorts of environmental things. So we can mitigate flooding, we can store water, we can stop it running away, we can capture carbon and basically create life through healthy soil. And we need healthy soil to grow our food. We need our food to remain alive. It's the one thing that unites us all. If we think about all the differences and arguments that go on in the world, one thing unites, well, two things, food and water, unite us all. We all need those things in order to live. So we can really celebrate that. And Raymond was talking about community and food really engendering community. And that's something that brings us all together. So it is a massive topic. Very exciting at the moment, because we can really use food growing to help improve biodiversity, improve sustainable outcomes, help our planet to be healthy, and at the same time help ourselves, because good food, really, we're learning more and more. Everyone's talking about the gut microbiome, but good food can really help us to remain healthy, resilient, and therefore reduce the pressures on things like our health system and all those sorts of things.
So is this the next question where I say to you, what's for tea tonight then, Sheila?
What's for tea? Have I thought about tea tonight? Well, yeah, it will be things from my garden. So what am I eating at the moment from my garden? I think we'd planned on having a bit of halloumi with some roasted vegetables. So I think I've got potatoes. I have an abundance of tomatoes. I've got peppers I've been growing in the greenhouse. I'm fairly, you know, adamant I have to have a nice something greeny with my food. So I love kale. So there'll be a bit of kale in there, maybe a bit of chard, onion will be mine. The only thing we haven't got an abundance of at home are mushrooms. I'm working on that. So yeah, and I love it. I just love eating that food fresh out of the garden or the allotment. It's really, really satisfying.
Oh, sounded good, that tea. Pity Glyn and I had to go home. The incredibly knowledgeable Sheila Das from RHS Wisley. And because it was an RHS live stream, Sheila was the one doing the comparing. She did a great job. And you can see her in action with both Raymond Block, who we just mentioned, and also Manju Marley, our first guest. Just log on to the RHS YouTube channel and they're both on there. Talking about Raymond Block OBE, Raymond was doing a live stream demo for a rather special apple tart with Sheila, alongside Becca Boast, his senior tutor at Raymond Block Cookery School, based in the heart of the kitchen at Le Manoir au Quatre Saisons in Oxfordshire. Raymond has to be one of the nicest people you could ever wish to meet, and Beck has worked for him for 10 years, so he must be, right?
Oh, he's as passionate and caring and truly inspirational in real life as you see in the TV and as he comes across. He is pretty fabulous.
The staff, though, that work with him, both at the Le Manoir and the Cookery School, nobody leaves.
Well, there is an amazing level of staff retention, and especially, like you say, within our team, within the Cookery School. We have Mark Paragrin, director of the Cookery School, who was Monsieur Blanc's first apprentice, I believe coming out to 44 years ago over the original Quatre Saisons in Summertown, North Oxford, in RB's first restaurant. And then he came back to run the Cookery School 13 years ago. Then we have Mikey John, who is the head tutor in the Cookery School. He's been with RB now, I believe, coming up to 16 years. Mm-hmm. And as you say, I've been there just about 10 years. Yes. So yeah, pretty fabulous.
So what's your day today like? I mean, you must get people from all over the world, which must be so exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So we take up to 8 guests, and we have over 57 different courses that we run across the year, and they tend to be mostly on full day. So a full day, usually the guests turn up around 9 o'clock, and then we talk through the day. We usually, depending on the course, have around 8 dishes that we cover in the day. But of course, like I say, we have many, many different courses, from seasonal dinner party, Maman Blanc classics, Christmas dinner party, Blanc Vite. And then, of course, amazing ones like Garden to Plate. That's very relevant, seeing as today we're here at Wisley Gardens, where we spend the morning down in the gardens with our amazing garden school team, because we have the Raymond Blanc Garden School also based in the heart of the gardens at Le Manoir. They will then teach you through, and as well as you will do and take home, propagation of herbs, microherbs, vegetables. And then you come to the cookery school for the afternoon, where you then get to cook up an amazing feast and have a lovely, I think it's a 4-course meal we do on that one. So lots of food, everything. I mean, we very rarely ever get a guest to leave hungry or thirsty from Le Manoir. Lots of food, lots of drink. It's pretty fabulous.
What about you, though? Because you're very young. Was it your first role out of college? Was it everything you wanted? You always wanted to cook?
Yeah, so I actually did a degree in UCB in Birmingham, which was called Culinary Arts Management. And it was something that I saw when I was 16. I wasn't quite ready to enter the working world and kitchens at that age. And I also went to a very academic school. So for me, it was that combination of something that I absolutely loved, which was business studies and cooking, but then being able to turn that into a career. So my mum one day came across UCB and their amazing culinary arts management program, and from there on I fell in love. I went to the open day and I saw a picture of Banff Lake Louise Hotel, and I said, right, that's it, that's what I'm going to do. So I did my first year of university, and then they send you off, it's called a sandwich course, which I always used to find quite ironic, but you go and do a year in industry. And my year in industry, I actually didn't think about it until I jumped on the plane to go. I ended up in New Hampshire, just north of Boston, up in the White Mountains in the States. It was very remote, very beautiful. And at the time there, I had an amazing head chef who was an ex-US Marine, a super passionate, super intense chef. But his love for detail really stuck with me. And I had the most amazing year there in New Hampshire at the Inn at Thornhill. And then finished off my degree, and then I got very luckily sent by UCB actually to interview at Le Manoir for a totally different role. I was interviewing to be Monsieur Blanc's development chef's assistant. Ooh. And as part of my interview process, one of my interviews was to cook a couple of my dishes, my own dishes, demonstration style, to all the heads of Le Manoir. And Mark Peregrine, the head of my cookery school, saw that interview, and then a couple of months later called me up and said, "Do you know what, Becca, I'm going to write you an apprenticeship. Do you want to come work for me?" And I said, "Okay, great. Absolutely, I'm not doing anything." And so it just really, I was very lucky. It fell into place, and I love the team. I love what we do. It's so varied. And like you say, we are so privileged to meet so many different people from all around the world every day in our job. It's fabulous.
Who's the most famous person that's come through your door?
So we've had the Beckham family came, I believe, last year before.
Is that how he learnt to cook? Because he's supposed to be a chef now, Brooklyn, isn't he?
He wasn't there, but it was David Harper, Cruz. Yeah, and so, I mean, we have all sorts of people, but also we learn so much from our guests, and that's something I find really interesting. We get a real mix of people who are there either as gifts, or that they're really passionate about cooking or food or the whole industry. It's a great place. It's very, very fun.
Becca Boast, senior tutor at Raymond Blanc's cookery school based in Oxfordshire, which needs to be on everyone's bucket list, methinks, both the school, the restaurant and the hotel, which has just won Best UK Hotel as voted by the Times and Sunday Times Travel Awards. So congratulations all. Now, you may be wondering why I didn't manage to chat with the man himself. Well, Raymond is lovely, but he's always on a tight schedule and a taxi booked at a certain time, ready for him to leave, to go on, because he's always going to go somewhere else. So hold that thought. Raymond never likes to let people down. So after his demos, he always chats and selfies are taken and books signed and all that, whilst his personal assistant and me look at the time and think, he's not going to make it. So at Wisley, just so you know, Raymond had two taxis, as the first one he definitely missed and nearly didn't make the second one. So at no point was I suddenly going to add to the stress of it all with my microphone. But here's hoping there'll be a chance next year, as fingers crossed something exciting may be happening. But I can't say anything just at the moment. Thank you for getting in touch this week. A few more subscribers, which is nice. And a review from Margaret, who listens whilst cleaning, cooking or relaxing. I guess depending on the length of the podcast, Margaret, you could end up doing all three. Also, talking about the scone recipe to the week with three ingredients, Margaret says it's very similar to her biscuit recipe that uses sour cream, self-raising flour, Sprite and butter. Hi to Angela, to Lisa, Laureen, Kathy, Teresa, Janet, Michelle and Pam. Pam loved Val's cake. She says, ever so kind of her to share the recipe, wasn't it? Even better if she shared a piece. No, you're supposed to make it yourself, Pam. And to Jerry, who says, hate to say it, Katie, but you mentioned caster sugar and mixed spice last week. Neither of which are really around in North America, but easy to make your own. And pumpkin spice, very similar. As for caster sugar, a couple of zaps of granulated in a coffee grinder and hey presto. Cheers for that, Jerry. Who'd have thought ingredients were such a minefield? Time for our final guest, and it's award-winning former head chef of many years, Tom Court, now doing his own thing with his family-owned company, Sticky Fig Catering, based in Worcestershire. Tom and his team do many and varied events, and at the moment, Tom's in the middle of a run catering for a television crew, filming for a prestigious primetime show here in the UK.
We look after film crews. Right. So we feed the people who do the sound, the cameras, the runners, the celebrities, whoever's there really, we feed them.
Well, that's exciting.
It is, yeah. We meet lots of people. It is good.
Now, I know you can't say certain people, non-disclosures.
Yeah.
But there are a few you can, and in one particular one, you ended up being in the film.
My hand was in the film. I wasn't in the film. There's my blue glove. Health and safety is in the film. Yeah, it is, yeah. With Kate Beckinsale, of all people, which was great. Which was, I got to spend the night with Kate Beckinsale. I mean, there's not too many blokes who can say that.
With a blue glove on.
With a blue glove on. But yeah, it's good. It is. It is good. We never know where we're going to be and what we're going to be doing next. So, yeah, it's good times.
Right. So when you say you feed everybody, so you have to be there by crack of dawn because they're going to be coming for breakfast and things.
Yeah, I never realised when we first started this, how long days are for film crews. They start very early because most of the guys who work for film crews are self-employed. They're not employed by the production companies. They like to get as many hours in as possible. So it tends to be from 6 a.m. till kind of 9 o'clock when they're at it full on.
Gosh.
And they work really long hours, but a lot of them work 6-8 months on and then take the rest of the year off. A lot of sound camera guys, that's what they do, you know. But interesting people, they work all over the world. You know, meet some fabulous people.
So do you have, say, times for that breakfast, for lunch and dinner, or do they just whenever they...
This is where we always have a schedule. There's always a a plan of the day, which is supposed to be itemised to the minute, but usually it runs over or they're early or late, or but that's kind of part of the nature of the business, you know. Who knows what's going to happen, especially in cooking programmes, because we cater a lot of cooking programmes and chefs are a nightmare and things go wrong, so we have to deal with it. And it's fine, I'm usually there all day, so we're quite flexible in what we do.
So you do this from the Airstream, isn't
yeah,
it?
Well, so you can't say Airstream because Airstream's a brand. Okay. So it's a shiny catering trailer.
Which I do like, that shiny catering trailer. Because if you look into it, it's like those funny mirrors you used to have in the...
Funny
mirrors?
Yeah, oh, I see.
The
yes.
funny mirrors that you had by the seaside.
It makes you look fabulous.
It does. I am so tall and so slim. Incredible. So I do like those shiny trailers. So you're in there.
Yep.
All day?
All day, that's... basically, yeah, on my own, like a sad act, with no friends, no one to talk to, in my 3 metre by 1 metre space. And it's set up as a full kitchen, so I can do anything. And it has to be, well, they want good food. As much as they want it to be fast and flexible and that, they want it to be really good. So we cook fresh from every day. And that's kind of our difference, not saying difference what everybody else does, because I don't know what everybody else does, but it's what we do, and it seems to work.
So do they all queue it a little?
They'll all turn up. Everybody will turn up and say, are you ready? And I'll be like, yeah, and give me 10 minutes. And 10 minutes later, there'll be a queue of 40 crew stood at the trailer. I'll feed them in half an hour, and they'll all bugger off again and leave me alone. But it's great, because we get to know them really well. And some of the stories they say are, you know, great. You know, they do all sorts of things. And it's interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
So That is purely in the UK, though. Have you ever asked to be gone abroad?
No, I wouldn't even consider it.
You wouldn't?
No, definitely not. Not for me. Closer to home, the better now. It doesn't get old.
So when you have these, you said about schedules right to the minute, I guess you'll get requests as well, or dietary requests.
Yes, they're a big issue. Always. I mean, we have to deal with allergens and dietary requests and fussy eaters. Because inevitably, I think the more famous you get, the fussier you get. I don't know whether that's true or not, but it seems to be. The one we did with Kate Beckinsale, we weren't serving people, but it was part of the film. They used the trailer and dressed it up like a burger van. It looked horrible. But we had to. There was a chance she may have had to eat some food, so they actually had something delivered from the Savoy just in case. She had to have something. She had to do an eating shot. She never had to do it, and it made about not even a minute of film, the whole thing. And it must have cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. It was South Bank, London, and crazy. Made like 30 seconds of film.
So just in case she would have had to eat something.
Yeah, they had to have something delivered from the Savoy, just in case. Yeah, I mean, that's crazy. But we deal with that. We're used to dealing with allergens and fussy eaters and all that all the time. It's fine.
Favourite person that's been to the Silver Shiny Tube?
Oh, God.
Come on, there's got to have been somebody.
Oh, it's meeting so many chefs, I think. That's the thing. I'm trying to think, what's the chef's name? Long Clume. But just when you see
Marcus.
Those faces. No, when you see, I mean, Marcus Ware, another one. Yeah, they come to, and you deal with these people, because the one we do at the moment, they have a veteran chef every week. And when you see these people in the queue, and you're like, I know you. You know, it's like, yeah, it's a bit scary. It is, you know, because they're the people you see on the TV. But they're just normal people like the rest of us. You know, we've done loads of different things. We've had famous people in the queue, and we're all the same.
The lovely Tom Court from Sticky Fig Catering, who once appeared in the film Jolt with Kate Beckinsale. Well, his blue glove did. And the chef who Tom was trying to remember was Simon Rogan. And I have to say, if you ever get the chance to stand by Tom's Silver Shiny trailer, you'll get an instant makeover. Thank you to all my guests, and as always, I will put their details on Shep Bagley's Instagram and Facebook pages, where you can also keep up to date with behind-the-scenes news and also get in touch. And if you feel the urge to leave a rating or a review, as Margaret did, please don't fight it. And hope you're following or subscribing too. It's totally free, and it does help when I invite guests to join us. So that's it for another week. Thank you for listening, and see you next time. I wonder why that picture is of me standing by Tom's trailer. Oh, there it is.